delivery from Mason Onati. This one in on the hands, ripped down the right field line, but that's going to roll foul near the Woodchuck bullpen. 3-2, two outs. Solis on first. He'll be taking off here on the full count delivery. The on-deck circle is the center fielder, Brady Giorgiello. The 3-2. This one chopped on the ground. Back up the middle. It's going to get through. Solis Jr. going to stay put at second. A couple base hits off Mason Onati for the middle of the Woodchuck order here in the ninth. Brady Giorgiello has reached twice today. The more important of the two is a two-run base hit in that nine-run fifth inning in which he later scored. He also drew a five-pitch walk off Kyle Bender a frame ago. We'll have your routine post-game show right here on WFHR. We'll take 4 to 5 minutes, though, after the final pitch to dissect the ball game. Although, based on how things have gone today, there isn't a whole lot to break down. We kind of got the gist of it all because of the slower-paced environment. It's been easier to absorb everything that's happened. By the way, we'll take the allotted time, and by we, I mean me, and we'll come back to deliver you the best analysis of this game and this doubleheader today. Count is 2-0 on Giorgiello, that one missing at his back foot. The 2-0 delivery from Onati. This is low and away, 3 balls, no strikes now on Giorgiello. You got to wonder if another position player would even be thought to be brought upon, or I would just imagine it's Onati through and through here. The 3-0 pitch. That one on the outside corner called a strike. Onati just trying to pump the zone here. The 3-1 delivery. This one hit in the air right field. Playable for Jorge Degatti. He camps underneath to make the catch. A nice round of applause here at Winter Field for Mason Onati. He works a scoreless top of the ninth inning. Wausau Strands 2. It's 14-6 as we head to the home half right here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR.
Hi, it's Tori DeVito. In every family, small conversations can make a big impact. I grew up on tour with my parents. Kind of different, but we bonded over music just like other families do over sports, camping, or other interests. And we talked. Little everyday conversations from silly to serious that built a foundation over time. Honest conversations, like when my dad shared his experiences as an alcoholic.
Your honesty about that part of your life gave me a sense of integrity that I wanted to uphold in my own life. And I was so grateful that you and Mom had become these sober, stable people who were always there for me.
With a little financial support from the Wisconsin Chairs Child Care Subsidy Program, more is possible. You can focus on work, continue your education, and take advantage of opportunities that make your family stronger. Best of all, you can give your child a great start with the high-quality care they deserve. What's your more? Learn how you can get help paying for child care by visiting wishares.wi.gov today.
The Republican National Convention is being held in Milwaukee, and it marks the first time the RNC is in the Badger State. But Wisconsin holds a special spot in the election cycle, with the RNC the second consecutive political convention in Milwaukee. The city was picked for the Democratic National Convention in 2020, but due to COVID, most of it ended up being virtual. Do you know which city has hosted the most political conventions? Philadelphia, Chicago, or Boston? The answer coming up. Political conventions started in the 19th century. It remained the main way to select candidates until 1972, when presidential primaries determined the eventual nominee. Conventions are now considered more of a celebration of the candidate. So do you know which city has held the most political conventions? Chicago. The Republicans have been there 14 times, and the Democratic convention will be hosted there for the 11th time this summer. 50,000 people expected at the RNC in Milwaukee, a nice slice of Wisconsin for the country to see. I'm Terry Barr.
Now, let's get back to exciting Raptors baseball here on WFHR.
Wausau brings a new pitcher in the ballgame here for the bottom of the ninth. Woodchucks lead at 14-6, your historic Winter Field against your Wisconsin Rapids Raptors. Garrett Lott, the right-hander on the hill, gets Aiden Teal to lead off this inning. First pitch missing up and away for ball one. 6-7-8, Teal, McElfatrick, and Lopez in this inning. Bosser Parish Community College, the sophomore right-hander from Cleveland, pitched in 9 games last year for the Woodchucks and is making his second outing for the team here this summer. 1-0 pitch misses high, 2 balls and no strikes here on Teal. David Brown, an inning and a third tonight out of the pen. He allowed 2 hits, 2 runs. Both were earned. He walked 3 and struck out 1 on 34 pitches. 2-0 misses low and inside. 3-0 the count now on Teal. Teal in this ballgame has reached in 3 of his 4 trips to the plate. Looking to make it 4-5. The 3-0 delivery. That one, a fastball on the outer edge, called a strike. 3.5 hours into this ballgame here tonight, and still so many wonderful Raptor fans that are in the Witterfield grandstands, taking it all in on a beautiful Thursday summer night. 3-1 pitch, swung on and missed. Teal loses his lumber in the process. That one down near the accessibility deck in the first base line. It'll be Tom Zaglowski, the first base coach and the head assistant on the staff of Kirk Schreider, having to go bring Aiden his lumber. I think Teal's ditching the batting gloves here for the 3-2. A 3-2 pitch here. Now you look into Aiden Teal back in the left-handed batter's box. Rubbing some dirt on his bare hands. Put the batting gloves in his back right pocket. The full count delivery from the right-hander. This one fouled away off the netting by the third base grandstands, and Teal lost his elbow guard on that swing too. He's losing all his accessories here in this final plate appearance in the ninth inning. 14 runs on 16 hits and an error for Wausau in the ball game. 6 runs on 9 hits and an error for Wisconsin Rapids. Full count again. This one bounced right back by Teal. Good fight here from Aiden. Another 3-2 coming here for Lott. Lott's first outing with the team this summer. Came against Fond du Lac, that 4-1 home loss. Only loss Wausau has had in the second half so far, the 3-2. Another one fouled back. Hit allowed, no runs, a walk, and 2 punch-outs. He faced 5 hitters at Athletic Park that evening. A 5.68 ERA and a 1.82 whip in 12 and two-thirds innings pitched a summer ago. Had an 0-3 record with a save in those 9 outings for the Chucks. Another 3-2 coming home. This one misses inside for ball 4. It's a 9-pitch walk for Aiden Teal to begin this ninth inning. Oh, and McElfatrick's 0 for 4, looking to change his fortune here in the contest right now. McElfatrick in a righty-on-righty battle. Last time up, he flew out to left field in the 7th inning. Racer Lopez, and then Cashel Duggar will get to hit if his spot is called. Gabe Casso, the starting catcher tonight. Then went to Kyler McIntosh as a pinch hitter in the home half of the 8th inning, and then Duggar obviously needing to come in as a defensive substitute. McIntosh wasn't going to throw on their shin guards and do the catching. First pitch to McElfatrick, misses high. For Wausau scoring, 2 in the 4th, 9 in the 5th. 2 in the 7th for Wisconsin Rapids, 1 in the 5th, 3 in the 7th, and 2 in the 8th. 1-0 count here on McElfatrick, 7 on the pitch clock. This one hit in the air, first base side. That one will get out to foul territory. Count evens a ball and a strike. A 1-1 count here. Raptors trail it by 8 in the bottom of the 9th. The 1-1 here coming from Lott. That one on the inside corner, called a strike. Count now 1-2. You still have some Fans down in the home plate club letting Jordan Alfonso hear it behind home plate after that called strike two. The 1-2 delivery. Swing and a miss. McElfatrick chasing at that one down in the dirt in the left-handed batter's box, taking second as that one kicks away from Solis Jr. is Aiden Teal. A strikeout of McElfatrick is the first out here in this ninth frame. Tracer Lopez has reached in three of his four plate appearances today. Lopez, a six-pitch walk, drawn back in the second. Led off the fifth by reaching on an error and later scored. Singled in the seventh, and last time up went down swinging an inning ago against David Brown. A lone strikeout Brown recorded out of the Woodchuck stable tonight. First pitch to Lopez, swing and a miss on that fastball to begin the count 0-1. Yeah, Duggar on deck, top of the order to follow. The 0-1. That one misses up and away. Count evens a ball and a strike. Lopez looking to reach for a fourth time here today. Lot set, the right-hander. Third base side of the rubber with four on the pitch clock. Lopez fouls this one straight back just to the left of our press box here. A near jump scare, at least for us. Up in press row, it's now 1-2. One ball, two strikes, one out, runner on second, that being Aiden Teal. The payoff pitch from Lott, breaking ball hit on the ground over to first. That one booted off the leg of Pemberton into shallow right field. Aiden Teal stays put at third. That'll go down. Actually, we've got to wait to see how that's going to be scored. Nothing put up official yet. Either way, Lopez is aboard for the fourth time in five plate appearances tonight. It will go down as a single for Wisconsin Rapids. Shocking to see that Teal did not get the green light home. By the time they realized the ball had ricocheted into shallow right field, it may have been too late and there would have been a play at the dish. Cashel Duggar, for the first time today, did not play in the first game either. First pitch to the left-handed hitting catcher out of UCLA is in there for a called strike. Duggar, a much-needed day off today after catching in three straight games. The 0-1. That one misses downstairs. Count now a ball and a strike. Count even at a ball and a strike. Duggar awaiting what he hopes is another fastball here from Garrett Lott. The 1-1 pitch. This one, broken back grounder on the middle to second base. Espinal gloves, tags the throw to first, is in time. It is an inning ending and game ending 4-3 double play. Raptors cannot push anything across. They pick up a hit here in the ninth inning. They leave one on, and our final score here tonight, 14-6. 14 runs on 16 hits and an error. For the Wausau Woodchucks, 6 runs on 11 hits and an error for Wisconsin Rapids. We'll be back in about 4 or 5 minutes for the official postgame show of Raptor Baseball right here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, locally grown radio.
Wisconsin traditions have been built for years around the Badgers, game day, and the mascot. But lead miners are the original Badgers in the state, not the animal or the mascot. It was the 1820s, and the miners often didn't have shelter in the winters, so they lived like Badgers by digging tunnels into the hillsides to stay warm and sleep where they worked. It led to the reason why today you really can't think of Wisconsin without thinking Badgers. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr. Are you and your family weather ready? I'm Terry Barr, producer of the Slice of Wisconsin series. Wisconsin weather is ever changing, and all of us with Civic Media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
The heat is on. Did you know that high temperatures are the leading cause of weather related deaths? Here are some safety tips when you're dealing with a Wisconsin scorcher. First, do not leave another person or your pet in the car. 8 kids died in hot cars in the last several years across the state. And it didn't even have to happen. Look before you lock and walk away. Work outside, keep water close, and stay hydrated. Take a break in the shade. And if you can limit time in the heat, even better. Chill out in the air conditioning or find your community's cooling shelter. And check on your family and neighbors to be sure that they're safe too. Stay cool and be cool by being weather ready. I'm meteorologist.
Thanks for listening to this Civic Media Station. You're one of thousands of people tuned in right now, whether on the radio, the app, the podcast, or stream. Audio is the number one source of information and entertainment among adults in the U.S. If you own a business or you're in charge of growing a business, this is a key fact, and you should know how it can work for you. That's where we come in. At Civic Media, our local radio stations influence local people, the same people who shop and buy at your place. Now we also reach those same customers wherever they are in the digital world as well. From podcasts to streaming to apps, laptops, and smartphones, our digital advertising capabilities ensure that we deliver the right message to the right people at the right time. And with our state-of-the-art measurement systems, we can prove it. Schedule a short meeting to learn how we can partner locally to help your business thrive. Go to civicmedia.us. Click on sponsorship. You'll hear back within 24 hours.
Now, let's get back to exciting Rafters.
There are so many traditions built around the Wisconsin Badgers, game day and the mascot, which in 1889 was a real badger. It didn't go well. Eventually, the animal was replaced by a person. An on-campus contest chose the official mascot name, Buckingham U. Badger. Still, Wisconsin's official animal is a badger. But do you know which animal almost earned this title instead? Gray squirrel, white-tailed deer, black bear? The answer is coming up. The original badger's nickname is actually associated with lead miners in the state, not the animals. It was the 1820s, and the miners often didn't have shelter in the winters, so they lived like badgers, digging tunnels into the hillsides where they worked. So was there almost another state animal? Yes, the white-tailed deer, which later became the official wildlife animal. But the history surrounding the badgers is a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
When it comes to advertising, the landscape gets more and more confusing every day. As a business owner, you've got dozens of choices on how to spread your message. At Civic Media, our goal is to help you unclutter that landscape. For 100 years, radio has successfully delivered customers to the doors of local businesses because we're local too. Local news, local topics, and local people that care about the places we broadcast. That gives your message credibility, and that's key when it comes to getting your message in the ears of the right people. Learn more about how this Civic Media station can help your business thrive. Go to civicmedia.us and click on sponsorship. From right here in our town to across the entire state of Wisconsin, we'll get the right message to the right people at the right time. And you'll be surprised how effective and budget-friendly radio advertising can be. Again, log on to civicmedia.com and click on sponsorship. We'll have a talk and help you craft the message that works for the people that you want to reach.
Let's get back to the ballpark and more Wisconsin Rapids Rafters baseball on WFHR.
Rafters dropped the finale of this doubleheader here at home today against the Wausau Woodchucks. Final score 14-6 at historic Winter Field. Andy Ockham, Rafters Radio, back with you as always here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR. 14 runs on 16 hits, an error, and 4 left on. I should say 11 left on today for Wausau. 6 runs on a total of 10 hits for Wisconsin Rapids, an error, and 12 left on. Scoring started in this one in the top of the fourth. We had 3 scoreless frames, the 2 starters today. Travis Lutz and Kenji Polaris. Lutz for the Woodchucks, Polaris for your Raptors, working some good baseball in the first third, but things kind of slowed down, stalled out, and the offenses came to play in the middle innings. 2 spot from Wausau in the top of the fourth got us going. But just like in game one of this doubleheader, it was a 9-run top of the fifth inning in which the Woodchucks sent 14 hitters to the plate. Some of the highlights in that frame, a 2-run single from Eddie Espinal, an RBI single from Bryce Hubbard. And you look down the line, Brady Giorgella had a 2-run single, and Hayden Christensen a 2-run base knock as well. Christensen drove in 4 runs today, also having a 2-run single in the seventh inning, that being the 2 runs that Wausau drove in that frame, and they added one more for good measure in the eighth inning on a sacrifice fly from Vance Sheehan. The Rafters got their scoring started in the bottom of the fifth inning on an RBI single from Mason Onati. Three runs were plated in the seventh when Wisconsin Rapids set all nine hitters to the plate and left the bases loaded. Owen McElfatrick, a warning track fly ball to left field to retire the side. Two more for Wisconsin Rapids came in the eighth inning on RBI single from Chris Arroyo and an RBI double from Max McGuire. On the Rafters side, McGuire had a couple doubles today, coming in the fourth and eighth innings. Nothing cooking in the ninth inning from either side. As mentioned, Kenji Pilaris got the start today for Wisconsin Rapids. Four innings pitched for the right-hander. His third outing with the team, his second start with the Rafters, and both starts coming here at Witter Field. Four innings pitched, three hits allowed, two runs, both earned. He walked three and struck out five and threw 66 pitches. From there, it was Mac Mabry, the left-hander from Carlsbad, New Mexico, who came into the ballgame, struggled with some command, and picked up the loss for the Rafters, going two-thirds of a frame, allowing four hits, eight runs, five earned, did walk three Woodchuck hitters and struck out one on 50 or 45 pitches. Nick Perry then threw the next inning in a third. Two innings of three-run ball for Kyle Bender before a fun moment here at Witter Field. Trailing by 10 in the ninth, Mason Onati came in to pitch the ninth inning, allowed two hits and didn't allow a run. 18 pitches thrown, a scoreless ninth, worked for the Rafter infielder. As mentioned, Travis Lutz, the three-inning starter tonight for Wausau, two hits allowed, one walk, four strikeouts on 45 pitches. It was Jet Slepik who followed with 45 pitches of his own in two innings, allowed two hits, one run. It wasn't earned. He walked one and struck out two, picking up the win for the Woodchucks in relief tonight. After Slepik, it was Garrett Brogdon for an inning and two-thirds, David Brown for an inning and a third, and Garrett Lott picked up the final nine outs in the ninth inning. Slepik the win, Mabry the loss. Time of the game here in this doubleheader, 3 hours, 38 minutes, 754 fans in attendance, 82 degrees and sunny at the time of first pitch. The Rafters dropped both games in this doubleheader today, 12-6 in the opener, 14-6 in the finale. We'll be back here tomorrow night, the beginning of a two-game series with the Lakeshore Chinooks. Mo Hill is in town, 6:35, first pitch, Friday night fireworks here in Wisconsin Rapids. Once again, 14 runs on 16 hits, an error and 11 left on for the Woodchucks, 6 runs on 10 hits, an error and 12 left on for Wisconsin Rapids. Andy Ockham from Witter Field, thanking you for tuning in to these two presentations of Rafter Baseball today right here on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, or on your Civic Media apps. No matter how you tuned in, thanks for listening to WFHR, locally grown radio. Have a good rest of your night, and we'll see you tomorrow for more Rafter Baseball here from historic Witter Field.
Thanks for listening to this Civic Media station. You're one of thousands of people tuned in right now, whether on the radio, the app, the podcast, or stream. Audio is the number one source of information and entertainment among adults in the U.S. If you own a business or you're in charge of growing a business, this is a key fact, and you should know how it can work for you. That's where we come in. At Civic Media, our local radio stations influence local people, the same people who shop and buy at your place. Now we also reach those same customers wherever they are in the digital world as well. From podcasts to streaming to apps, laptops, and smartphones, our digital advertising capabilities ensure that we deliver the right message to the right people at the right time. And with our state-of-the-art measurement systems, we can prove it. Schedule a short meeting to learn how we can partner locally to help your business thrive. Go to civicmedia.us. Click on sponsorship. You'll hear back within 24 hours.
You're listening to Wisconsin.
You've been listening to Rafter Baseball here on WFHR. Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, American Shaman, Mid-State Technical College, Skyward, Aspirus Health, Solaris, Ho-Chunk Gaming Nakusa, Delta Dental of Wisconsin, S&S Distributing, Econ Electric, Greenaway RV, Comfort Air Heating Cooling Fireplaces, Pro Seamless of Wisconsin, Swiftwater Ice Cream, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep Dodge. Listen into Rafters Baseball here on WFHR all summer long, or check us out on the Civic Media app.
What are we telling the rest of the world when half of the country is saying that we're behind Donald Trump? Unapologetically. In fact, wearing it on our shirts and on our hats and flying flags in front of our homes with profanity and ignorance on display. What does that say? In a place where we've got real problems. You know, just the other day, I saw House Speaker Mike Johnson. He spoke at the Hudson Institute. And he was talking about, again, the agenda, the stuff we're not talking about. While we're talking about, is Joe Biden too old? Or we're talking about, hey, you know, Donald Trump wears a diaper. You know, so he's literally dumping the important stuff. That doesn't seem to get us anywhere. But what he said at the Hudson Institute was something along the lines of, we're going to go and cut Social Security. We're going to go and cut those entitlement programs. We're going to go slash and burn that stuff so that we can increase the military budget. Now, understand, I think we spend more on military than like the top, I don't know, 20 countries combined. We account for, you know, almost half of all military spending on this planet. We could literally end homelessness. We could end hunger. We could do all kinds of stuff. But we've chosen to spend it on the military. Now, am I anti-military? No. I'm in favor of having a big, muscular military that you put over there, behind glass, when in case of emergency, break here. I agree with Teddy Roosevelt. Walk softly, carry a big stick. I agree with that because I think there's a deterrent to it. But to say that we're going to slash Granny's Social Security, or more likely my Social Security and my generation and future generations' opportunity to retire so that we can continue to feed this monster, kind of a problem. Especially when you're talking about a time, and again, you can't make this stuff up, where you've got a Boeing CEO who's stepping aside, the company that went and agreed to to plead guilty, you know, as long as it's just fines, you know, we're not going to put the CEO in jail. Of course not. You know, to the tune of billions of dollars. So, you think about what happens to Granny's Social Security and Grandpa's, you know, pension. You know, it used to be you work 40 years, you got a gold watch, and you got a defined benefit pension. I don't think they're giving out the gold watch. I don't even think you get a card anymore. But what you do have is you got a Boeing CEO who basically ran that company right into the ground. Not to mention a couple of planes that killed, 340 some odd people. He gets to walk away with a golden parachute of some, $45 million? And of course, going to be taxed at a lower rate thanks to Donald J. Trump. So for me, I look at this place that we're in, and we're having, one, all of the wrong conversations. We're not talking about how we're going to make lives better and futures better for our children and our grandchildren and creating a better future for humanity. No, we're not talking about that at all. We're talking about an old guy who sadly is diminishing and a guy who lies repeatedly and wears a diaper. When do we get to the stuff that makes lives better? And this is why, again, I think people are frustrated. They're angry because they don't see their government doing the work for them. We've been fed this red hat, blue hat stuff. We got to be in our teams and we got to fight each other and all of that. And it's, look, understand, it's the elites doing this. It's us. It's we, the working people. We're the ones who have to talk to each other in the workplace. We're the ones who have to talk to each other in the churches. We're the ones who have to talk to each other in our social interactions. And then find a way to find that common ground that we agree on. Because, you know, I go back to this and I still believe it, that we agree on more than we disagree on. You know, sometimes we're fed these crises. You know, someone's going to the wrong bathroom. Someone's marrying someone else. And then that's what we're fixed on. We're fed a constant diet of it. The outrage machine of our mainstream corporate-controlled right-wing media is amazingly powerful because they know what divides, what angers, that's what sells. That's what gets your juices flowing. Not talking about, hey, you know, The job I do now for a living, you go back to the 80s when I started. Had it just kept up with inflation, the wages I was making back then, I'd be making about $15 to $18 an hour more. Where's that money? Where did it go? And that's just not me. That's across the entire workforce. So you wonder why you're struggling to put food on the table? It's because your wages haven't kept up. If you're wondering why you're struggling to pay the rent and keep clothes on the kids' backs and do all that, it's because your wages have not kept up. And why? Well, we've got a Republican Party hell-bent on destroying workers' rights and a Democratic Party that, to be fair, was not always the greatest ally. Until Joe Biden. And I stand by Joe. I know he'll do the right thing. But more importantly, I stand by the people that he put it in with him. I stand by this Democratic Party now. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A stray evening storm otherwise clearing tonight and lows in the low 60s. Sunny and mild again tomorrow with highs in the mid 80s. Slight storm chances for the weekend, highs upper 80s to low 90s. Staying warm into Monday with a few storms, then cooler for the rest of next week. It's 69 degrees
to
right now.
To everyone looking to make mealtime more special, our team member Joel is here to celebrate the Culver's fan favorite.
Our limited time Pretzel House Pub Burger is back. Two kinds of melty Wisconsin cheddar cheese, fresh beef, or thick cut bacon, all served on a soft pretzel roll. This Pub Burger has Wisconsin in every bite.
Stop by Culver's for a handcrafted favorite.
From Wisconsin with love.
Welcome to Delicious.
Culver's, 8th Street South, Wisconsin Rapids.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Wednesday, the House of Representatives actually passed something. The Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act. Or the SAFE Act, or SAVE Act, SAVE. I don't know what they're saving, but it passed by a vote of 221 to 198. You've got 216 Republicans, 5 Democrats who voted for it. Henry Kuhlhauer, the guy from Texas, Don Davis from North Carolina, Jared Golden from Maine, Vincent Gonzalez Jr. from Texas, Maria Glusenkamp Perez from Washington. What's interesting about this is the Brennan Center actually did some research on this back in 2017. And what they found out of like 24 million votes that they examined, there were 30 that were suspected of being non-citizens voting. None proved, but 30 that they suspected could have been. So you're looking at like a 0.00001. Is this worth Congress's time? And isn't it already illegal? And here to share some thoughts on this, the guy who actually helped write the Help America Vote Act that already made this illegal, our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. I was going to give you you blew the punchline. I was going to give you a trivia test and show how schooled you are on all this, okay?
Hit me.
Well, the trivia test was, what two members, actually quite good-looking, intelligent members, in 2002 passed the Felony Attestation Act? One's Democrat, he's still there. One's Republican, who does radio.
So obviously it would be Steny Hoyer and well, you.
Yes. Steny Hoyer and I, we authored the Help America Vote Act. Ted Kennedy and Mitch McConnell. Can you imagine that combination today, something like that, in the Senate?
That was a different world.
And it was a complicated election bill. Jimmy Carter called it, next to civil rights, one of the greatest rights bills and movements, because he and Carter and Ford, put together the Ford Commission with Baker that we took the information off of it. I mean, it was just a perfect way to do it. Now, one of the things that we agreed on was there would be a felony attestation. So everybody in the country, this is a mandate, everybody in the country, when you sign this form, you are automatically attesting, it's an attestation, that you are a citizen of the United States. So Democrat and Republican board members who say, wait a minute, I think that person is clearly not a citizen, have a legal way to pursue it, whether it's, you know, 30 people, one person, Ohio, I don't know if they had one or something, but it's already there. So today is a, what do I want to call it? A look what we did vote. Yeah, it's reaffirming Steny and I. How about that? They should call it the reaffirmation vote for the Help America Vote Act.
No, but, you know, as I look at this, you know, you go, well, you have to get a government ID. You have to have a, you know, a passport, a military ID. And, you know, I thought, you know, I seem to remember there were people, especially on the Republican side, who were opposed to national ID cards or any of that kind of centralized databasing. But, you know, the thing that is, if this were to pass, and I don't think it's got a chance of actually becoming law because it's already illegal. But what I would find really interesting is when that red hat guy shows up and they go, well, we need your passport or we need your birth certificate, and they can't find it.
Well, we left the IDs up to the states, Steny right. and I did. Now, what we did, we mandated certain things, provisional voting so that people aren't turned away from the polls. You know, you're not told, no, you don't live here, you've got to go away, whether it's because of your sex or your race or your political affiliation. And we mandated the attestation. Some of it, though, we mandated the last four of your Social Security or some form of proof, like a bank statement or something showing your address. But we left it loose for the states, you know, on the ID end of it. This would federalize, you know, IDs. So that was something way back when that we all agreed we weren't going to do, you know, and I don't think much of the attitude has changed. I don't think you'll get a federalized, quote, ID system out there. But again, there is an attestation. Yeah. And the point is everybody has to sign. And if you're illegal, then you'll pursue it. Now, let me give you the other scenario on this, Rick, too. I'm a Board of Elections person. Somebody, you know, produces an ID and, oh, okay, they're a citizen. Well, you know, they could have manipulated something. They could add false papers. So it still is going to boil down to people, you know, thinking there's a reason that this person in particular may not be a citizen. It can be checked out and they have signed an attestation. So I don't see where the ID thing is going to do anything for the system whatsoever, except complicated.
Yeah, but it makes people feel better. And here's the thing, this whole thing defies logic. If you are here in an undocumented status, if you are here illegally, I doubt you're going to show up to a government facility and give them your name and address. It defies logic to me.
And, well, in general, they don't. And there have been some that have, but again, it's so small of an amount of people, because you're right. In general, people don't say, I think I'll go risk everything to go vote. And then there's some people that had a green card, thought they could vote. I mean, there's some of that, too, that's out there.
See, in my experience from the people that I've talked to, the vast majority of this stuff that happens is people error. I thought I was able to. I got this green card. I'm in the process of getting my citizenship. I'm, you know, all of this stuff. That okay, we fixed that. But, you know, this just seems like a solution and looking for a problem.
Well, it's you know, it's sexy and spicy type of vote.
Is it?
Sure. People are going to be home. I'm stopping the illegals who are going to take over the United States tomorrow morning. Now, when this all came up, Steny and I had the same opinion. I can remember the quote. Call me old-fashioned, but I think you ought to be a citizen of the United States to vote.
That I agree.
Our quote. And, yeah, so I mean, I'm all for citizens-only voting. And so we made the attestation. End of the story. If somebody believes that somebody is not legal, you've got a means today to do it. You've had it since 2002. Yeah, this is the press release vote where, because think about it, who's going to come back right now, and the media won't dig into it, back in locals, who's going to come back and say, look what you did, you're just doing this for show? Yeah, they're not going to do it. So this will be a newsletter or a
campaign literature.
Press release, right?
Yep, that's
yes,
all it is.
Campaign literature.
That's all it is. Let's move along. I'm not sure if you saw this or not, but some senators have reached out to Merrick Garland over our attorney general, and they have sent him a letter saying, hey, we think you should look at that Clarence Thomas guy. Maybe appoint a special counsel to probe all of the trips that Thomas has taken. And in fact, you know, on one of the pages, page 14, actually, they point out that Thomas may have taken a trip to Russia, a yacht trip and a private helicopter flight to Putin's palace. What is our Supreme Court justice doing in Putin's palace?
Well, I mean, if he did that, he shouldn't have been there. But on top of it, all the other trips, the money. And look, I took a trip. I filed that trip. Wasn't the right amount of money, but I filed it. And I was born in Wheeling, West Virginia. Lived temporarily in Morgantown Federal Corrections in West Virginia. I'm not going to be buried in West Virginia. So, you know, I paid the penalty of the improper filing on the trip. And I'm looking at the Supreme Court. I'm thinking, why are they different than any of us that are in Congress, were in Congress, or anybody else about filings? Why should the Supreme Court be different? Just because they're the highest court in the land, why should they get a free ride? You know, Roberts didn't do anything about it. He looked into it. It just shouldn't happen. So I think it's very interesting for them to put the pressure, you know, towards the attorney general to say what he thinks. What should it be looked at? I mean, otherwise, Supreme Court just does not have to follow any ethical guideline.
Now, I'm also sure you saw that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez introduced articles of impeachment against Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito because they failed to recuse themselves in cases that, well, you know, they've got friends in those areas.
Yeah. Well, if I was AOC's head staffer, I'd have said, hey, Thomas, yeah, leave Alito out of it because, yeah, the flag and his wife and blah, blah. I think Thomas is so full of ethical holes, and it's such an issue. Everything I've read, and I don't know anything about the Russia thing, but even prior to this, anything I've read takes your breath away. So I think focusing just on Thomas would have been better, but it's okay. You know, she's filed on both. That, again, brings attention to.
Yeah, I mean, wined and dined, flown all over the world, yachted across the world, had, you know, a kid of, you know, I guess a grandnephew or something, put through school, bought the parents' house and turned it into a museum. I need better friends.
Yeah, I went on a golf trip. I need better friends.
Let's move along. Evidently, President Biden has sent a letter to Congress telling him he ain't going nowhere.
Well, yes. I mean, things are beginning to come apart at the seams. I think it's up to 10 House members, one senator, and, of course, George Clooney, which gets a lot of publicity. I thought the Biden campaign answer was horrible on Clooney, basically alluding that the president has more stamina than George Clooney because Clooney left early and the president stayed 3 hours. You know, president had a very adamant letter. I'm here. This is why I'm here. Now, some of the campaign's statements, too, are starting to become troubling because as they answered, these are Democrat elitists that want the president to leave.
You're
one better be very, very careful about that.
Yeah. No, you're dividing the party.
Yeah, very careful about that. I know Trump talks about elitists if anybody's against him, but this is a different ball game because everything's focused right now on the president. I will tell you this, whatever they're going to do, they need to do it now by the time, you know, your show ends. They need to wrap this up. When I say they, president, powers to be, the Democratic Party, on two aspects. by Sunday night. You know, the president is staying or he isn't. Now, I know the president says, I'm staying, he wrote the letter, but that's because the president has to be debating it now, but he can't come out and show any sign of weakness because then the media goes nuts. If he would say, for example, I'm staying, but I'm going to talk to Joe Biden tonight and my family about it, boom,
opens the door.
The media goes crazy. So, but if the president, and again, I'm serious, this weekend, they can't be waiting another, you know, 10 days. If the president is staying, he's staying. And you circle the wagons and you go for it. If the president is leaving, though, if there's not an agreed to exit strategy, you can't be having a couple of the senators say, well, let's pick a new person this way. Somebody else says, well, let's have a mini convention. I saw where they said Oprah Winfrey and some other people ought to have a series of candidates debate in front of them. I mean, if one thing's for sure, if the president leaves, this needs to be absolutely lockstep. Here's our candidates. We go for it. We're going to go into the convention.
No, I think if the president is going to step aside, it's got to be this weekend. Before sure. The RNC convention, because that news will completely suck yes. The air out of the RNC's sure. Little song and dance. And you know, I had a guest this week say, look, you know, if he were to, you know, step down entirely, hand the presidency off to Kamala, so that people get used to having her as president. She runs as an incumbent. You know, that may be a way to go as well. I know some people are pushing that. I don't think that's going to happen. But I do think that before the convention, an announcement has to be made.
You know, if that did happen, because, you know, Kamala Harris can be debatable in the polls, but if that did happen and he actually handed the presidency to her, that's an entirely different press ballgame, entirely from there till the end of the election. That would be quite incredible.
Now he gets to be Uncle Joe. He gets to say, look, I did what I came to do. I saved democracy. I passed all this great stuff. This is my legacy. And they could run on that, going, look, he can go around doing rallies and all kinds of stuff and then pass that torch. I was always going to be the conduit to the future. There's so many great, great sure. ways to pass this along that would give him historically, I think would be an incredible legacy. But I'm not sure that's going to happen. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and it would also make him a hero within the Democratic Party because, as he says, he wants to save democracy. Well, if he believes in his heart of heart that Donald Trump is going to destroy the democracy of the country, if he believes that, then you're right. He could spin that so many true ways of saying, look, I don't like this. I think I could have done okay, but I understand where this is headed, and I'm going to hand it off. But within the Democratic Party, he would be a hero because if he stays and everything goes in a really bad direction, House, Senate, et cetera, then he's going to go down as the guy that, you know, took the party down in a tsunami.
Was the guy who transitioned us into fascism. That will be the legacy.
So, yes, you're right. There are 1,000 ways to spin it. And you know the other thing that could be done? Look, I'm thinking, you're a political guy, I am. You know, the exit, have some accolades to him, some events. There could be a lot done with it.
There could be an awful lot done with it. And right. It would be a lot of positive press. And you could, going into the campaign, actually steal a couple of news cycles, which Democrats don't do well. Right. But, you know, we'll see. Again, we'll see. But, you know, the fact that we're concerned about saving democracy, and I know you know about Project 2025. We've been talking about it on this show for just about a year now, because right when it came out, we jumped all over it. Nobody seemed to think it was important. Now it's all the rage because, maybe we shouldn't put the president in charge of the FBI or the Justice Department. You know, maybe that's a bad idea. But, you know, Donald Trump came out and he completely distanced himself from it. Why do you think he did that?
Well, you know, you talked about 2025. Another station I do, somebody called in about it, and that's how they talked about it. But, yeah, you know, you were ahead of the curve, and people talked about it a little bit, and and it got buried. But 1972, the Heritage Foundation came into being. Ronald Reagan became the president, and Heritage, you know, excelled. And of course, Heritage Foundation, this think tank, is about developing 2025 because it's an integral part of 2025. 2025 not only goes into completely redoing civil service to declassify jobs and basically make them all presidential appointments, which I'd love to see the court actions on that one with civil service. But on top of it, it has language in there for Christian nationalism, you know, to mandate basically a quote Christian country, which of course there's this little thing in the Constitution called separation of church and state, separation of powers and church and state. But in beginning, you know, first of all, ideas were signed off and fed through the conservatives and the Trump campaign. Once I think Trump's top campaign people realized that, what do you want to have any controversy like this for as it erupts, especially after January the 6th, especially after all the losses with the election fraud, Giuliani, et cetera, and especially after the White House making the mantra about democracy and authoritarian government, the last thing you want is to have been part of a document that has, you know, the ability to basically hire and fire everybody at the whim of a president only in the entire federal system, and to deem this will be a Christian nationalist run country. So yes, I think Trump even said he never saw it or something.
Oh, I find that to be BS. I think, yeah, you know, as I think I've read this somewhere before, that the whole reason he came out against it is the perception that he's not in charge, that he would have to share power or something. And it makes almost no sense, because it gives him absolute control to hire and fire. It weaponizes government in ways that even Jim Jordan couldn't fathom.
Yeah, and I think his campaign is at this point is like, look what's going on with the Republican platform.
Yeah.
Look at that. You know, they're now diluting, quote, the abortion issue in some people's eyes. You know, I don't think so, but in some people's eyes they are. So it's very interesting. They're trying to, for the first time in the last couple of years, calm things down a little bit, to take the, you know, controversial side of this or that out.
Lull people to sleep. False sense of security before they give them the good jab. I hear you. I hear you. Bob, as always, great stuff. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1968. That was the day that the American Indian Movement began at a meeting in Minneapolis, Minnesota. A group of 200 Native Americans gathered together to discuss a response to the U.S. government's history of broken treaties and the devastating consequences on Native peoples. The statistics of unyielding poverty and high unemployment in Native communities were staggering. By 1970, 40% of the Native population lived in poverty. The unemployment rate was 10 times the national average. Life expectancy was only 44 years old. In the early 1970s, activists staged a series of occupations at Alcatraz, Wounded Knee, and at Mount Rushmore. Mount Rushmore is built on a site in the Black Hills that is sacred to the Ocheti Sakowin, or the Great Sioux Nation. The United States government promised Native rights to the land in a treaty that was broken when gold was discovered. In 1972, activists staged a Trail of Broken Treaties caravan, which ended in a six-day occupation of the Bureau of Indian Affairs offices in Washington, D.C. They issued a statement that read, quote, "We seek a new American majority, a majority that is not content merely to confirm itself by superiority of numbers, but which conscience is committed toward prevailing upon the public will in ceasing wrongs and doing right." Beginning in the 1970s, the United States government began to respond to Native people's demands. A series of federal acts gave Native communities more control over their education and improving their health care. Lawsuits brought by tribes resulted in further economic autonomy. Yet by 2014, one in four Native people still lived in poverty.
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So I saw this thing over on the Twitters. Evidently, Twitter is, or X, or you know, Elon Musk's little toy. Evidently, they're testing a dislike button. And I'm not quite sure what, you know, with all of the things behind it. I gotta assume that the more people who dislike it, the further down it goes, and the fewer people who see it. Now, the weird thing is the algorithm is so boogered up that most times, unless you pay Elon Musk, unless you pay for the blue check, they throttle what people see of yours anyway. But the dislike button could probably just completely silence people entirely, which might be a reason to follow Elon Musk. Because it seems like he's turned... it's right-wing propaganda all the time. And let's finish up on some interesting news. As you know, the Biden folks are pitching the idea of taking on junk fees, you know, going after how much they screw you over on ticket prices, how banks, if you happen to be a penny short in your account, give you a good jab of an overdraft fee, sometimes you know, like 30, 35 bucks. And it's one of those things where they're charging you more of what they know you don't have. But according to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's proposed new rule, they would be capping that overdraft fee at just $8, because that's what they're saying it costs. Because they get their money anyway. It's just this incentive, this extra thing that they tack on to fatten their bottom line. And you go, well, if it only costs $8, why do they charge 30? Where's that other 22, 24, 26? Where's that other money go? Well, I think we know where it goes. It goes into their pockets. It's how they, well, it's how they give themselves lavish salaries and all of that. And what I found interesting is the Wall Street Journal did a bit with this Mariana Lake. She's the head of Chase's, you know, she's the head of their marketing department, I believe, of their Chase Bank. And she said they're going to have to get it from other people. They're not losing their profit. And look, as I was searching the inner tubes for what do Americans spend every year on overdraft fees, I found numbers ranging from about $8 billion up to $17 billion a year. Pure profit for the big banks. Now, me, I go to a credit union, and they don't charge you that high fee. In fact, they generally give you, you know, a little bit of forgiveness, or they... You know, they'll pay it and then say, hey, you know, chuck it in here. A much different experience. Or, you know, they just take it from your savings account if you have one. There's a lot of ways to ensure that you don't get. Now, I know what people say. Well, if you don't have the money, you shouldn't overdraft. Sometimes people make mistakes. Some people, there are errors in math. Sometimes a direct withdrawal comes out you weren't expecting. There are times when this stuff happens. And it seems to happen a lot to people who don't have money. You know, poor and working class people who are living paycheck to paycheck. So every couple of weeks, if something happens and you get dinged with a non-sufficient fund bill, it's going to cost you $34, $35. I think I saw one that was almost $50, someone was saying. It's a lot. And by taking this on, I think the Biden folks have shown a little bit of, hey, you know, we kind of care about you working folks. We want to make the playing field a little bit more level. And it's something I think is kind of important. It's just another one of those little things. Now, look, there's a lot of big things we should be doing without question. But it's one of those little things that makes you go, yeah, this is why we should be voting for people who care about working folks. Just my thought. Want to hear yours? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Something on your mind, something I said made you think, made you angry. I want to hear about it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. Also, check out freespeech.org for our videos. As always, Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therickssmithshow.com.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.